Good evening. Just before I begin the shir itself, the shir will actually have two parts. The first part will be certain prepared observations that I want to share with you. And subsequent to that, I will open the floor to a number of questions. I would be remiss just finishing a simcha namishpacha and hoydul Hashem kitayv kileyelam chasdo to thank the Rabbeinu Shalom for all this kindness and the simcha that was just completed, and may the Rabbeinu Shalom grant that all of you merit, in fact, to celebrate such simchas in your families as well. I want to give some insight into some basic issues which involve the kosher kitchen. And one general observation that I have that learning particularly takes place in all the mitzvahs maaseyos in two particular ways. From direct observation of what our parents did, and from that which we learn and study on our own, in school, etc. The balance has changed decidedly in the last generation. The generation before mine, undoubtedly, most of their learning was from observation, and very little from what they studied in school. In my generation, it began to change, and it's changed drastically today. And consequently, there are both positives and negatives to that. The positives, in terms of a lot of book knowledge, we're probably a lot more knowledgeable than those that came before us. But the Masorah has weakened as well. And a lot of things which in the generation of my mother, Allah Shalom, would have been self-evident and obvious, and not so obvious today. So, we need a little bit to review some very, very basic ideas. And the first basic idea I want to touch upon is the necessity of the power of pot of the kitchen. And this is often overlooked in our sophistication. In terms of the laws of kashrus, we often overlook the necessity of the power of a section of the kitchen. And we basically know we're obviously not going to cook milchiks in the fleishiker pots, or fleishiks in the milchiker pots. So after that, what's the problem? The first and foremost problem that we have is the area of knives and cutting implements. One of the fastest ways to bring about disaster in the kitchen, very simple. Take an onion and cut half the onion with a fleishiger knife. And, you know, well, you don't want to waste money, so what are we going to do with the second half of the onion? Put it back in the refrigerator. That's all though. It wasn't an onion, it wasn't hot, the knife wasn't hot, the knife was clean, I scrubbed it with steel wool, and I put the onion away. Tomorrow, I'm going to make a milchiker omelette, and I'd like a little bit of onion in it. Well, so, I'll take a milchiker knife tomorrow, and cut off some onion, dice it up, and throw it into the milchiker omelette. So what happens? We generally know that, fortunately, when things are cold, nothing happens. If I mistakenly place milk in a fleishiger bowl, if I realize within 24 hours of the time that I did it, if the milk was cold and the bowl was cold, all I have to do is pour out the milk and rinse out the bowl with cold water, and nothing too exciting happened. And yet, if I take a knife and I cut an onion, and if I cut a garlic, I cut a lemon, a lime, a pickle, just to give some examples, any of these things, the halacha is that even in the absence of any substance of fleishiks, for example, and even in the absence of any heat, but the onion becomes fleishiks. And if I'm to take that onion tomorrow and cut it with a milchiger knife, I'm going to actually have a problem with bosa v'cholov. And the Chasam Sofer is quite sure, in fact, that this is a din, not even a din derabbanan, this is a din deraisa. So, the existence of parva knives in the kitchen is very, very important. For this particular reason, to keep things apart from each other, to keep the onion from wandering around and creating problems of bosa v'cholov in the kitchen. And the problem can get more complex than that. Because if I take this onion, which I cut with the fleishiger knife yesterday, and I put it into the food processor, I have a major question if the blade of the food processor has now become fleishig too. The Mishnah Berurah, one would find such a psak. If it happens in your house, then you better ask a confident rov at what point you can limit the disaster, which is beginning to spread. Because if your food processor became fleishig, and tomorrow you take a brand new onion and you chop it up in the food processor, well, now you have a fleishig onion. But as far as we thought, it was parov, and we put it into milchiks now. And now we put the hot milchiks into the plates on the table, and we ate it with asuvah. So this can become a very, very troublesome problem. Now, it is equally true of cutting boards as well, that you need to have parov cutting boards. You cannot cut an onion on a fleishiger cup, or with the power of a knife on a fleishiger cutting board without running into problems as well. So the power of a part of the kitchen is a very, very important part of the kitchen if you want to keep things in proper order. And this, among educated people, is one of the biggest problems. Because in our sophistication, whereas a two deras back, if they put cold milk in a fleishiger bowl, they'd put it away and they'd go ask the rov and they'd be in trepidation for 2 days what happened to their kitchen. And our sophistication, we're not concerned about it. But because we're not concerned, we're also not concerned, we lost the notion of parav in the kitchen. And we have those things which are called dovah harif, which have sharp flavor to them, sharp taste to them. And even in the absence of heat, and even in the absence of any substance of fleishiks, if the knife was ever used for hot fleishiks once in its existence, it renders that onion fleishiks, the entire onion. Now, if you are concerned that sometimes you're not the only one in your house that does cooking, you have a babysitter that comes, sometimes your husband comes lunchtime and he's not exactly aware of everything that you left behind yesterday, then I have a very simple piece of advice for you. And this is advice. One of the things that I do in this world is I don't have enough headaches, you know, and I have too many aspirins. So for that reason, I undertook to be the chairman of the Kashrus and the Vada Rabbanim of Kuitz. And one of the things that I insist upon in commercial kitchens, that when they have a leftover onion in the type of place that serves milchiks and fleishiks, that they throw it in the garbage can. Use half the onion, take it, and throw it into the garbage can. You'll save a phenomenal amount of grief. Because the babysitter won't take a slice of onion and put it in the milchiks tomorrow, your husband won't do it, your mother-in-law when she comes will take it out. It's the easiest way to deal with this problem is take it and throw it in the garbage can. But and I leave to your discretion. I'm just giving you a piece of good practical advice that works well. Now, in terms of the, I want to turn my attention for a moment to oven tops. I'm talking stove tops. Now, stovetops principally do not create much of a problem. It's one of the fortunate things in the halacha, that the halacha states that due to the direct flames on the grates, that the grates are neither milchiks nor fleishiks, And we presume that anything which spills down, it burns up instantly and does not become absorbed. And consequently, I can cook milafix here today, I can cook splashix here tomorrow, and it remains kosher. Now, number one, one still has to be careful. Sometimes you have a pot that boils over and leaves a mighty mess behind. Now, what if everything burned up, so there's no problem. But if it leaves a residue that didn't burn up, then at least you have to clean it off before you start to cook tomorrow. That's number one. Number two, I was just in Los Angeles, and one of our chaverim called me. They called me already when I was in New York, and they wanted me to paskin a certain shaila about their stovetop. And the truth is, I did not fully comprehend what they were asking. So I told them when I come to Los Angeles that I'll go over to the house and I'll take a look at it first in and I'll see what it is. So I arrived in Los Angeles Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening they came, they picked me up, we drove a few blocks. And I discovered a type of stovetop which is modern, which I have yet to see. But it's important to you that you account for it because I'm sure that you are going to see it. It has two burners on each side and a big white space in the middle. But what they did is they created another grate which goes over the middle section as well. And I guess that way if you want to slide a pot to the side, for example, or slide it from one side of the oven to the other, or leave it there to keep it somewhat warm, so you can just slide it there and you don't actually put it down on the enamel, it has a grate. The only problem is that it does not get particularly hot because there's no fire under it. And it's a removable grate. So the question was, can this grate be used for milachix and for fleishix as well? And I do not believe that they can use this for milachix and fleishix. So if you have such a grate, you should establish which one you want it for, either the milachix or the fleishix. And when you cook that one, you should keep it on the oven. And when you're not cooking that one, you should take it away and put it away someplace. So this is also a problem which is very, very easy to have. Now, microwaves present significant problems in the kosher kitchen. First, let me address a notion which is believed by many, but which is clearly factually untrue. And that is, since we know that the microwave itself does not get hot, in the technological process that's involved, it only heats the food, it doesn't heat anything else. So there are many that believe that the microwave itself is not going to become trafe, because only the food gets hot and nothing else. But they're guilty of factual error. And the facts are very simple, that if you heat anything in the microwave which has liquid to it, the liquid becomes hot, it becomes steam, and if it stays in there long enough, you'll touch the walls of the microwave become hot. Now, if hot steam hits the walls, so whatever the nature of that steam is, if it's a chicken soup, the microwave is becoming fleishix. If it's a corn soup with milk, it's becoming milafix. So it has a significant problem of basar v'cholov in a microwave. Now, it's also, the fact that it's a small size is also very, very significant. In terms of the halacha niradeya, a very small oven, which is closed, which is basically what a microwave is, has much more problems than a larger oven. Another problem that exists with microwaves is the fact that people generally do not keep them as clean as they keep their stovetops and their countertops. And I still remember the time that I was called, a woman called me, and she wanted to make blintzes. So the blintzes were frozen. So she asked her child to go downstairs to the microwave and defrost the blintzes in the microwave. And the child did. Then they brought up the blintzes from the microwave and they put them into the middle of the toaster oven. Well, lo and behold, she subsequently went to examine the microwave and she discovered that there was leftover cholent on the bottom of the microwave. And the blintzes were placed smack on top of the cholent. So now, not only did she have a problem with basar v'cholov with the blintzes, but now she took the blintzes and she put them into her milachik toaster oven too. So, in general, microwaves are not kept as clean as other things. And for that reason, I have a very simple recommendation, and that is that whatever you put into the microwave, double wrap it. Just double wrap it. You'll save yourself a great deal of grief. Then, irrespective of what may spill and be left over in the microwave, you're not going to have problems. Otherwise, you're going to make discoveries that even if yesterday you did double wrap something, but sometimes the steam gets a little bit too strong, the pressure, and it blows out. And you find that it's splattered milk or chicken soup all over the microwave. See, if you realized it yesterday and you cleaned it up, it's not so hard to kasher. You wait 24 hours, take a cup of water, you put it inside, and you allow it to steam up the inside of the microwave, and the microwave becomes kosher. But one thing that you cannot kosherize is if you have an earthenware, a ceramic turntable on the bottom, a ceramic turntable cannot be kosher. You're a lot better off getting a microwave with a glass piece on the bottom, because the glass, either it doesn't have to be kosher or it can be kosher. But ceramic cannot be kosher. So the first time that you're going to have something which is going to blow up in the microwave, mildly, and splatter all over, you're not going to be able to kosher the ceramic base, the ceramic turntable. So you're much better off getting one with a glass turntable in the first place. Now, I also want to turn it a slightly different direction. We're sitting in a yeshiva now. And all of you that are here are dedicated to a particular cause. And that is that your lives revolve around the fact that your husband should spend the days learning. The consequence of that is that you are away during the day pursuing a livelihood for your family. And if you have young children, you have hired help that comes to your house. From babysitters are wonderful to have, but they're few and far between. Few and far between. Now, whether you have a non-from babysitter or you have a non-Jewish babysitter, but you're in the same boat. The basic guideline of the halacha is that a person that does not observe a particular halacha has no namonis, has no halachic integrity in terms of telling me what took place in this area of halacha. So if a person does not personally observe kashrus, when I talk about personally observing kashrus, I mean inside the house and outside the house, that they will not eat in a tray for restaurant even outside the house, even if they'll only bring kosher into their house. But if they leave in a tray for restaurant outside the house, they do not have halachic integrity, what we call namonis. Now, consequently, you are bringing a person to your house on a regular basis who does not have nemunos in terms of kashrus. Now, I will tell you that it's very, very common that they do things that they're not supposed to. Sometimes they realize they're not supposed to when they do them anyhow, and other times they have no realization at all that they're not supposed to be doing such things. There was, in this yeshiva, but not in this building, and back when the yeshiva was in Forest Hills a number of years back, there was a workman that came one day to work in the kitchen in the yeshiva to repair one of the appliances in the kitchen. And it came lunchtime, and the fellows in the yeshiva came in and they discovered he took his sandwich with sausages and whatever, and he put them into the yeshiva's oven to warm them. Now, he certainly did not think he was doing anything wrong. I mean, he did not, if you want to retain your employment and retain your contract, you don't go and trash the place with tires. So I don't suspect that he willfully did anything that he thought he wasn't supposed to do, but he couldn't imagine why in the world, in any other kitchen in the world that he goes to, if he wants to warm his lunch up, to let him. So why in this kitchen should it be any different? Now realize he is not, you know, doesn't have a background in the Jewish religion. And if you want to realize how strange the Jewish religion is to him, the morsel that I give to people is, imagine that tomorrow one of you took a job and you worked in a Catholic or a Muslim institution, religious institution. And there you came, and you have really not the foggiest notion of what their religion is about, but you're expected in their environment to live up to their standards. Now, one realizes how daunting a challenge that would be. I mean, I have no idea what's right and wrong by their standards. So I will just try to catch on, and otherwise I'll do things that I think are appropriate. Now that's basically when we bring a person that's non-frum, a non-Jewish into our home, that's basically what takes place. They have little real insight and understanding of what we want, and they go about things in their own way. Now commonly, very, very commonly, I don't know how many times, that people have discovered that they're non-Jewish babysitters, at the very least, are bringing non-kosher lunch together with them and warming it up in their microwave. And it's a citywide problem, it's a countrywide problem, wherever we are. And then, if they're supposed to prepare food for the children, well, if we err sometimes, and I can tell you I have no shortage of shyness from frum people, which concern Bosel v'Cholov, because to err is human, then what takes place when we turn a non-Jew or a non-frum Jew loose in our kitchen? If we make mistakes at times, then we can imagine how many mistakes they're likely to make. And we're going to come home at the end of the day and not have the foggiest idea of what took place. It is a very severe problem, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that's Chupas, was very, very machmer about this problem. Very, very machmer about this problem. And what I will tell you tonight is, I'm a liberal. I'm not from the machmirim, I'm from the liberal ones when it comes to this halacha. And what I tell everyone is that if you invite a non-frum person into your home, and you're away when they're not there, then you have to establish some system of hashgacha on your house. Whether it means that you have a neighbor down the hall that has the keys that'll pop in from time to time and see what's going on, or whether your husband will run home at strange times during the day on a regular basis to see what's going on in your house, or in some other fashion that the situation is not left in an uncontrolled manner. That's number one. Number two, what I strongly recommend is that you do not allow a non-Jew or a non-frum Jew to cook in your house altogether. And the most that they should do is, if necessary, that you've already cooked the food before and have them warm it up in the microwave. And give them, in fact, throw away plates and throw away silverware to warm it up in and to throw it away. And the stove they shouldn't touch, the pots they shouldn't touch in your house. That, together with having someone come in and out on a somewhat regular basis, will give you some measure of control. Now you have to let them know. Now you can do it in religious terms or you can do it in medical terms, and that's up to you. That you're very, very finicky about these things. You might want to tell them, for example, that your child has a lot of allergies and they're very, very sensitive, you know, to food, and therefore they shouldn't give them any food that you haven't given to them. And even to prepare food for them, you know, the child's very sensitive. And therefore, you know, you're the only one that really knows exactly, you know, what you're supposed to prepare for the child. That will also give them somewhat pause. And you have to let them know that this is a very serious matter, that if they don't live up to this, they're not going to be able to remain in your employment. That there they want employment, and you're paying them. If you're paying them, then you can make reasonable demands upon them. And one of the things that you should tell them is that they should not bring lunch with them, that you'll give them lunch of your food in your house, prepared for them already. But they should not bring their own lunch with them. These are just, and as I say, I am from the liberal ones when it comes to the Shaila. It could be a lot more machmer, but this is after a great deal of consideration, and I say Rav Moshe is very, very machmer in this particular Shaila, this Chubas. This is the least that one can do if you want to maintain the integrity of the kashrus in your house. Now, there's another problem besides. I've talked until now about bosel v'cholov and mixing bosel v'cholov. You know, from a non-Jew standpoint, to take butter and put it into a meat dish is a very, or milk is a very normal thing to do. Just open up any recipe that you see in the newspaper and see how many recipes that you can find that you can actually use in your own kitchen because they don't have bosel v'cholov in them. Few and far between. The non-Jews don't have our religion, but foolish they're also not. Eish chochma b'umas taimen, Chazal tell us. There's wisdom in the non-Jewish world. If they make most of the dishes with basar b'cholov, then there's a good reason that they do so. Obviously, they could choose to cook food the way we do, the way they do. And obviously, they find it satisfying to cook it the way they do. So when they cook for us, they have no reason not to put milk into the chicken soup, and not to put butter into the roast beef. And they can't imagine what could be wrong about that. So this is something that you have to be very, very careful about. But I've talked now only about issues of basar b'cholov and bringing treif into the house. But there's another problem altogether. Chazal legislated various halachas which were intended to limit the social interaction between Jews and non-Jews. And we live in a society where this becomes increasingly important. When a Jew lived isolated in the Jewish ghetto and the non-Jewish society was not willing to accept him, a Chazal still thought that a person needed means of keeping himself apart from the general society. We go to work, we're in a non-Jewish environment regularly, we work in a respectful fashion with non-Jews, and these are not peasants. Our grandparents live with non-Jewish, our great-grandparents live with non-Jewish peasants to the largest extent. These are not peasants, they're educated, sophisticated people. They're people that wield enormous authority and responsibility. And we have a deep respect for them, as we should, because they are capable, professional people. And certainly then in our society, the legislation that Chazal has made in terms of limiting the social interaction between Jews and non-Jews is very, very important. Now, one major piece of that legislation is what we call the prohibition of Bishul Akum, that a non-Jew may not cook food for me, even if he cooks with totally under my personal supervision. I can watch him cook everything, and he has plot potion, the mahadran ingredients, everything, and I personally supervise them throughout, still also to eat many, many types of food. If you cook potatoes in this fashion, meat in this fashion, soup in this fashion, they would all in fact be prohibited. And not only would the food be prohibited, but the dishes in which they were prepared, the pots and pans, would also have to be kashered as well. Now, increasingly, this is an increasing problem today, because historically, many ovens 25, 30 years back came with pilot lights. I mean, they had a little gas fire that was burning there all the time. And when the range top was opened, or even if the oven was put on, one didn't take a match to it, nor did one have an electronic ignition. That flame lit the gas. And consequently, that sufficed to resolve the problem of Bishul Akum. However, in today's ovens, due to varied reasons, including the scarcity of fuels, and our society wants to save on fuel, so they've eliminated in many places, in most places, pilot lights. So typically today, you light an oven, you open it up, and you hear click, 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 and that's an electronic spark gun, which is shooting sparks, and pretty soon, one of those sparks actually ignites the gas, and the fire goes up. But there was no pre-existing flame before you open the handle. Now, consequently, when a non-Jew cooks on this stove, there is a problem with Bishul Akum. So beyond all the other problems that we have in our house, in terms of basar b'cholov, and then bringing treif ingredients, even if they don't violate basar b'cholov, and even if they don't bring treif ingredients, and they only use the ingredients that I give them, I still have a problem with Bishul Akum. So if I want to give them macaroni to cook for my child, to give them for lunch, the macaroni is going to be osur. Just as osur as anything else which is non-kosher. So they're very, very limited in what they actually can cook. If they boil water in your house, the water remains kosher. That's the reason, in fact, that one can go into a coffee shop which sells kosher coffee and buy coffee and there's no problem of Bishul Akum, or buying a cup of coffee. But Bishul Akum is a very, very serious problem, and that itself also, that's a major reason why you should not have a non-Jew cooking in your house when you're not there. Now, even if you are there, if you're Ashkenazic, then you have to at least put on the flame, light the fire. If you're Sephardic, that doesn't even help. In the Sephardic practice, the food has to be put directly onto the fire, or you can put the pot on, and then the Jew has to light the fire under the pot. But it does not suffice just to light the fire. So Bishul Akum is a major, major problem, and one that needs a great deal of attention, and across the firm world, it is not properly observed. There were people, in fact, that were employed a number of years ago that were in touch with me in a very Haredish bungalow colony. Very, very Haredish. And yet they were concerned that in many of the houses in this bungalow colony that they could not eat. Why? Because the stoves and the cooking was typically done by Polish shiksas without any supervision whatsoever, without any arrangements being made to take care of the problem of Bishul Akum. So this is a very, very significant problem, which is observed in many places more in the breach than by proper observance. And this is something that we have to be very, very attentive to. At this point in life, and later in life, the likelihood is that you will also be out of your house a significant amount of times. Most women today are ultimately career women. And for a big portion of your life, you're not going to sit in the house. And you're likely to hire someone to come in to take care of a lot of things in your house for you. And you have to be very, very careful about Bishul Akum. Now, let's turn our attention to sinks and to ovens. In life, some things become easier as technology advances. And I would say in the last 20 years, the most significant advance for the kosher consumer has been the self-cleaning oven. Because this makes it relatively easy to kosher an oven if it's milchik and to use it tomorrow for fleishik, if it's fleishik, etc., to use it for milch. In life, I would recommend to you, at this point in life, you're by and large renting from other people, so you can control exactly what you put into your house. But when you reach the point in life that you have your own house, I would highly recommend that you have two ovens, one for the milchik and one for the fleishik. Will save you a great deal of grief in life. And you should have self-cleaning ovens. You could even kosher them for Pesach that way. Life will be a lot easier than it would be otherwise. But in the absence of having two ovens, so there are very, very significant issues that one must address. The first thing one has to be careful about is things that spill in the oven. If I take food, a pan, and I put it into the oven, well, what's on the rack, what's left on the rack from what I cooked yesterday or I cooked earlier today. And you know, sometimes we have minor spills in the oven which burn up, and sometimes we have major spills in the oven and we have gook all over the place that doesn't burn up so quickly. If you allow it to cool down or you touch it, it's very greasy to the touch. Now, you made chicken and the chicken spilled out and left grease all over the place, and then you come and you take a parable pot and you put it right down on chicken grease and you cook. So now you have a problem that what was supposed to be parable is now flesh. So preferably one should have for each type of food a separate rack. If you don't have a separate rack, so at least if you put a sheet of aluminum foil underneath when you put it in. In other words, let's say principally this is a fleishig oven. So that's basically what I cook in this oven is fleishigs. When I put the parv in, I should put a sheet of aluminum foil under the pot. So in case there's anything under that, it will not in fact render the parv pot fleishig. And this is a very, very simple and practical solution which avoids a great deal of problems. Now, in general, there are varied views on this subject, and I don't want to go through all of them. There are three major schools of thought which were promulgated in this city by the great Rabbonim in the last two generations. I will take basically the approach Lechatchila of Rav Moshe Zatzal, and that is that, let's say you use the oven principally for fleishiks. So that's fine, you cook the fleishiks open, And everything else that you cook in the oven, you cook closed. You wrap it and tightly seal it on the top so the steam does not escape into the oven. If the steam does not escape into the oven and you put aluminum foil underneath, then there's no concern if I'm cooking a milchika dish in a fleishige oven, as long as it's tightly closed on the top. This is the best means of dealing with this situation. In terms of power in and of itself, I am generally quite makel for a number of reasons. And that is, if you cook, for example, chicken today in the oven, and you took the chicken out, and you let the steam escape, the hot steam, and now you want to bake a challah, and you bake a cake subsequent to that, then that cake or challah couldn't be eaten with milchiks. You don't have to, even though you just finished cooking fleishiks. And if a parv that remains in such an oven, it's parv, and you can eat that together with milchiks. But the milchiks themselves should be obviously, and the parv, you should put a sheet of aluminum foil under it, and the milchiks you should tightly close. Yeah. You could dip it in the coffee, not only eating. Okay, I think I made myself clear. Which pens? Yeah. Well, you should not put it down directly, that's what I'm telling you, on a fleishige rack. You should put an aluminum foil under it. If it did happen, it's very likely it did happen already. So what you should listen, Rav Moshe Paskin like the Gro, and basically, this does not apply to knives, so don't misinterpret what I'm telling you. For trepans of this nature, you can wash them clean and wait 24 hours and use them for power again. Okay, so disaster doesn't strike so quickly. Yes, or even if it touched fleishig. So let's say fleishig splashed on your tea kettle. Hot fleishig. You have the chicken soup shot out of the pot and splashed on your tea kettle. So you can wash it off and you can wait 24 hours and use it for power again. What? So you wash it with cold water and soap, and after 24 hours you could use it. After 24 hours since it happened, you could use it for power again. This is a cooler motion that's based really on a psak of the Gro, and it solves a great many problems. You know, power is very good to have in the kitchen, but power is not so easy to have in the kitchen because things fly around. As a practical observation, let me tell you something else. You know this better than I do, because you take direct responsibility for this. I only watched this happen. And that is when you fry, and particularly if things are a little bit still frozen, things splatter in 100 directions. So one good piece of advice is if you fry anything on the oven, if it's fleishiks, take everything that's non-fleishiks off the stovetop. No, don't leave any power pots there, don't leave any milchiker pots, cart them away. If you're making French toast, take all the power and milchiks out of there. And you'll save yourself 100 calls to me. Yeah. If, unless it's significant enough to steam up the oven, it's not a problem. Even if there's a little residue, again, you didn't put it down directly on the pan, on directly on the fleishiks, and there's a little residue, as long as the residue is not enough to create steam. And we're talking about baking something. Baked items do not produce a great deal of steam in the first place. I mean, if there's residue, for example, then it's a whole different problem, and you have a great deal of steam, but we're talking about baking items. Baked items remain powerful. You could eat it or you could put cream cheese on it. Well, you should put solar, you should start now. Well, yes, yeah, I told you, wait 24 hours since it was least exposed to flash six and the power. If the chicken is covered, the kugel will remain powerful. Yes, yes, yes. If the chicken is not covered in the chatchili, you should not eat it. You should not eat it with the lachs. Then, because the flashing is steam flying around the oven. No, even if something of this nature, let's say it was exposed to steam from chicken, for example, you shouldn't eat it with milchix, but you would not become fleishix from it. Now, let me tell you something else. It's like very interesting. I mean, I've often been asked this, Shiloh, and when I was in Los Angeles, I have a cousin who is one of the Raman in the yeshiva there. And he came to me at the chasana, at the end of the chasana, and he said they on holiday wanted a clarification on this halacha. And I told him, I answered him. So he told me, in fact, that one of the rabbonim in Los Angeles, one of the major rabbonim, paskens this way too. But someone else who is a significant player was not in agreement. So they wanted to know what I held. Now, for example, let's say you go to a place where they're serving rice and they're serving meat dishes. And the rice is parv. They didn't make it. There's no flesh and gravy in it. Now, you want to take a few spoons of rice and you wish to remain parv. You have no interest in being flesh. Now, you're not the first person to come down to take food. Now, probably somewhere along the way, some fellow took his spoon and he had some residue of the meatballs or the chicken gravy wound up, some residue of it wound up in the rice. Now, if I eat it, will I have to wait 6 hours afterwards? And halacha is I cannot eat it with milchix, that I cannot do, but I will not become fleishix to have to wait 6 hours after eating it. It's based on a psak and a shach, and whatever, this is not the form, the lum, this is not important here. The halacha of the mice is important, but this is a very, very common situation which takes place, particularly if you eat in a place in a camp or you eat in schools where there's a cafeteria. This happens on a daily basis, and it's a very, very important halacha. You would not become fleishik in this type of situation. Yeah. Even if I know that the fleishik is spoon touched it. The only, what it would be different is if I willfully put fleishik in for to flavor, etc., a dish, that's something else. Then you become fleishik eating it. But if it just happened to wind up there, it was not your intention, it is merely some flavor that went in, or a small amount, it will not render you fleishix. That's not a problem. That's not, you know, it will not render you fleishix to have to wait 6 hours. Even in your own kitchen, yes. Yes, yes, you can eat it with milchix, but you won't have to wait 6 hours afterwards. And a cup of coffee tastes very good. Yeah. Yes, but their point is a very important point, and let me clarify this point. Many people go, for example, they'll buy French fries at a pizza shop or in a burger nash, and they'll say, well, it's all parv. And consequently, they want to eat it with fleishix, or whatever, let's say I bought it in the pizza place, I want to eat it with fleishix. That you cannot do. Realize that in a commercial kitchen, they do not use the same oil for frying that you and I use at home. Oil is expensive, and it burns up. And consequently, they have very special oil that they use for frying that would sustain high heats and not burn or boil out. And because of that, when they dump into the deep fat fryer oil, they don't empty it out too quickly. And today they make cheese balls, or whatever they call them exactly, cheese nuts. And later the same day, in the same oil, they fry your French fries. And the same is going to take place, and for example, what are going to fry your falafel balls in the same oil in which cheese was fried earlier in the same day in the same oil. So you undoubtedly cannot eat that together with fleishix. It will not make you Lasix, but you can't eat it with Lasix. That's very, very important to keep in mind. It's this people, as I said, in our sophistication, we open error. How many times I've heard that people declare, oh, you know, it's really powerful, and that's it. They don't worry about it. They're very, very greatly mistaken because they don't fully comprehend the nature of what goes on in a commercial kitchen. Yes? No, I don't believe so. I do not believe so. Yeah. Okay, it's a good question. What I'm telling you is lechatchilo. It's not b'diavad, but it's lechatchilo. Lechatchilo, you should have, obviously, separate salt shakers for the milachiks and the places for a very simple reason, that you do notice that you have to wash the salt shaker sometimes. So somewhere they got dirty. And they get dirty because people's hands are not 100% clean. So that's number one. And in general, the halacha states, if I should have to wash something to allow it to be used for milachix or fleishix, then I ought not to put myself in that situation that I have to remember to wash it. I should prepare a different one in the first place. That's number one. Spices have a particular problem to them, which is a greater problem than salt. And I'm talking lechatchila, I'm not talking b'diavad, but lechatchila. And that is that oftentimes spices are added to your cooking, and you taste it, or you know how it's going to taste, so you take the black pepper out and you give a few shakes, you take out the garlic powder and you give a few shakes. Now, it's in an environment where there's a great deal of steam that's coming up from the pot itself. Now, and the Rishonim state very clearly that that steamed environment is considered the same environment as the pot itself. So undoubtedly, lechatchila, one should be careful not to use the same spices for milachix and fleishix. In commercial kitchens, I tell people, in fact, to prepare two separate sets of spices for this reason. And it's a good practice in the house, too. If, as that is said, most people tend to pour spice over the pots. What? Listen, you know, it's very fine, but tomorrow maybe you won't pour so high.
No, but in general, I take up the cover and
then
If you're careful,
it's fine. But life is not always so easy to be careful. I'm making a recommendation. You know. What? What? Well, but you do. No, it's very. I'll tell you what you can. What you can do is very simple. If you mark them with M&D on the front, people will respect that. That's what I tell them to do in commercial kitchen. Sure there's a way. The way is not to bring the spices, to put it in your hand, but to put it into a spoon dry and take a flay-sugar spoon and put it into the... But the problem is, if you're concerned that your husband and your children are not going to be careful to take the milachis in the place, they're certainly not going to be careful to take a spoon. You know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And the shortest way to do any problem, to solve any problem, is the easiest way. And that's the way it tends to get solved. Yeah. It would not be awesome with the oven, no, because it's not normally, you don't get fleishix and milachix inside the salt shaker. I'm saying with the oven, the steam, it may not be hot enough, etc. I'm not assuring with the oven. Lechatchila, no. I'm not talking what's going to happen with the yevam, but lechatchila, you should not do that. Now, let me give you one other piece of advice, which is very helpful. Part of the problem with covering food, for example, I told you, most people, not everyone, but most people tend to use the oven more for fleishix than for milachix. And consequently, what's easiest to do is to leave the fleishix uncovered and to cover the milachix. Now the problem is that not everything that you want to make is going to come out the right way. Because sometimes you want to brown the top, etc. And a closed top with the steam collecting inside, it's not going to brown. Now, if you have a separate broiler underneath the oven, now broilers have a big miler. And that is that the broilers have a fire on the top. And for that reason, the broilers are not affected by this problem. So you can take something at the end that you want to brown and put it inside the broiler, or something milachix, and allow it to brown inside the broiler section. What you do have to watch out is from time to time to check the boiler to see the nothing is splattered, and if it's splattered, clean it, and then put it on for an hour and burn it. But you can take something milchiks and put it into the broiler without concern that the steam is going to have an effect on the process because of the fact that the fire is on the top. Yes?
An electric oven, right? You have a broiler on the top and cooking, you know, on the bottom.
In one, you cannot be makel with this problem because we use it for the fire on the bottom also. And therefore, the steam flies around in this oven.
Right.
No, this would not apply. That's only applying to those people that have separate broiler compartments underneath the oven. Yeah.
If I have an open apple crisp or anything open that's carved in the same oven as an open flishing thing, is that open carved thing now flishing?
You should certainly not eat it with milchik slachatchila, that's for sure.
Oh, but doesn't make me flishing?
No, you will not become flishing from eating it. Yes. No, there are more paskins to follow. There are more paskins lechatchila that the entire oven is onion is rendered milchiks of leishiks, and with the eved about the thickness of one finger, which means if I made a mistake and I cut off from the opposite end of a big onion a piece and I put it into a pot, it would not be treif by the eved. But lechatchila, the entire onion, lemon, pickle, etc., is affected. What do you do with the dough from a Rosh Hashanah? I will tell you something that no one else told you before. And I did find in the past year that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita of Bnei Brak, in fact, agrees with me. What I tell people to do is, in an oven in your house, you should not try to burn up the challah. For two reasons. Number one is that it's not, by and large, it's not going to work. When as much as you're going to burn it, at the end, the middle is still not going to be burnt, because it's not hot enough to burn it. That's number one. Number two, if you take the challah and put it down, if it touches anything in the oven, so now you have a problem, you have to kasher the spot which it touches, because the challah is only edible for kayanim, and even for kayanim with manazeh, for varied reasons of tumah, not allowed to eat the challah. So now I have something in this which I'm not allowed to eat, which got absorbed, which the oven absorbed. So I'm creating a great deal of problems. When you do this in a commercial setting, for example, in a matzah bakery, when this is done, you have an oven which is at 800 degrees, approximately. When you throw the challah inside, within 2 seconds of the time it landed, it disappeared. It's ignited and gone. But this is not going to happen in your home oven. So what I tell people to do, and our own practice is, to take off the challah. After you declare the challah, you made the bracha, is to wrap it in a plastic bag, tie the plastic bag close, and throw it into the garbage. This is minhag Yerushalayim in terms of how they deal with trumas. After the mafresh truma, the minhag Yerushalayim is they put the truma in a bag and they tie it closed and they throw it out. And this is, I found Rav Chaim Kanievsky, as I said, wrote as well, that this suffices for challah as well. It is the wisest way to deal with challah in your own house. Yeah. I believe that Aleph Suradov Acharev. Well, still do it. Wait for 24 hours after you washed it then. I want to answer this question separately, privately. I do not want to answer this question in public, whatever. Okay, for reasons that I have. Okay. Mayonnaise is not charif, but you have to be careful. It's not, but in the total, it's made with vinegar, but the effect of it is not sharp. When it's not sharp to the taste. What you do have to be careful about, I would advise you, without getting into all the particulars, if you use something like horseradish, if you want to use it in the milchik for fleishig aside of the kitchen, you should take it out always with a power of a spoon. Don't take it out with fleishig spoons or milchik spoons. You'll save yourself a great many shaylos. Yeah. You want to, yes, the answer is yes. In other words, your question that you asked me is the following. Let me explain. But the question is the following. We know that the halacha considers it somewhat deleterious to our health, for whatever reason, to have meat and fish together. Now the question is, can I cook fish in a fleishige pot? And I will tell you two things about it. Mitzad Adin, certainly it's mutter to do so. And in Siman Tzadikei in Yoredei, it's recorded both in the Shach and the Taz, that if I cooked meat today in the pot, and I washed the pot out, I can cook fish in it afterwards and there's no problem. But I will also tell you that there are many communities, in fact, which are particular to have a pot which is not used for fleishiks in which to cook fish. Okay.
When cutting, in dealing with the rakaras, it sounds like it's not only a knife, then it's an issue with...
Knives deal with the type of devil chalif that you cut. But if you have a devil chalif which has liquid to it, and you place a spoon into a brine, or a liquid which is sharp, and a jar of horseradish is sharp, then it becomes fleishig. It's affected in a very rapid fashion. So therefore you should avoid this strenuously.
What about like in a pickle jar with the brine? So if you're trying to take a pickle...
Well, if you just took it in and out, you would not have a problem. In other words, if you put a spoon inside and you took it right out, but if you left it there for a while, you can wind up in a problem very quickly.
If you stuck a fork into it,
that may create a problem. I cannot absolutely tell you, but at least on that particular piece, I would assume there's a problem. Well, should I be politically correct or not? So now you say, you can use your fingers or use something powerful. Okay. Now, you can take whichever answer, the politically correct one or the practical one, but that's your choice. Oven mitts. Yeah. Oven mitts are one of the fastest ways to make your kitchen treif. Absolutely, yes. Oven mitts, very simple. Oven mitts are almost the biggest nightmare that you have in a kitchen. And the reason is, very simply, oven mitts have all types of gook on them. And they're usually made even of materials that if you washed it, you'd probably wind up throwing it in the garbage altogether. The thing it's not made to be washed. And from a lot of observation in many, many kitchens, and as I say, as a reb, I'm more involved with, the Rebbeinu doesn't give hashgacha in a private kitchen, so I don't spend too much time in private kitchens. But in commercial kitchens, I see often. And in commercial kitchens, you see it very, very quickly. The gloves are gooky. And if you're going to take gloves with fleishig a gook, and you're going to take hot milchik a pots, you have very, very serious problems. Now, just what I'm going to tell you now is self-evident, but once we touch the subject, nevertheless, I will just make the point. If you're the type that uses food thermometers, then make sure that you have a separate one for the milchiks and the fleishiks, and you keep them very carefully segregated, by buying color-coded ones of two different types and making some type of siman upon them so you know which is which. Because that's also a very fast way to make the whole house treif. Well, that's a very long subject. If you have a problem, it's best to ask a shayla. I would not try to answer that question in 1 second. All the way in the back.
Back to the problem. Is there a problem with cooking something in the microwave that wasn't cooked before?
Most poskim say yes. Okay, there happens to be there is one major posik that holds otherwise is not a problem, but most poskim hold that microwave cooking is considered regular bishul. I would include in that Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So I am certainly concerned. I don't throw stones at someone that says otherwise, because I said there was a very major rov. who holds otherwise, but I don't paskin that way.
Okay, so if it's already happened, let's say...
I wouldn't use it.
And those posts are the same thing.
Yes. Okay. You know, if you have shyness with kashering it, whatever, that you can ask me separately what to do about it.
No.
Just 1 second. Yeah. No, hang on. Over here. Good. Yeah, it's also a problem. The problem is with the knife becoming flasic, with the onion becoming flasic. So do not get involved. That's what I told you. Be very meticulous about power. Have power of the cutting boards and power of the knives and use them. But you also not only shouldn't cut on a flasic plate, but a power of a knife.
What if you don't want to touch
it? Listen. We're not, none of us are such acrobats that we have such absolute control. Yeah. Yes.
And then I take off the cover of the pot, say I'm cooking something else, like, and I put it on, you know, the other part of it. And
oh.
I, when I work the plate, I do the same.
Yes, so what you should do with lace, this is an important point, which I've touched upon in the past. In the, I gave the share a number of years back, and this is one of the points that came out of the share, that when the fire is on, it burns up whatever's on there. When the fire is over, it doesn't necessarily burn, there's nothing to burn it up. So you certainly, if you did that, what you should do is at least afterwards put the fire on and let it burn.
Under the cover of the pot.
In other words, take the cover, after you take the pot off, if it dripped on there, at least take the fire, turn, you know, make sure that it gets cleaned off, at the very least.
Right. The stove
is
even, it's clean.
Yeah, but now you took the cover off the chicken soup, right? And now the chicken soup is dripping down on the grate. Now you put the cover back on the chicken soup pot and you took that away, right? Now you have chicken soup that dripped all over a grate, right? They didn't go anyplace. The fire hasn't been on yet. So at least you should clean it off while I put the fire on to burn it off before you're going to put a milchika pot down on it. This is very something that you need to be very careful about.
And also, if you want
kasher all of them, that's all, that's right. Now, basically, don't use them for 24 hours, wash them with steel wool and soap, and put them in a pot which hasn't been used for 24 hours at a rolling boil. And yet, take a pot which are basically a power pot, to make it simple, and boil them at a rolling boil, rinse them in cold water, and it's not a problem. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Well, let's put it this way. It certainly you should avoid putting things on there to the extent that you can. Put a trivet there or something, because things spill there. It's not as hot as the regular part of the oven, and it could become non-kosher.
And if food drops onto it, like
let's say
you're frying.
Well, usually, listen, if you haven't used it in the last 24 hours for the hot, you know, let's say hot milchik, so you don't have a problem. If you used it and hot milchik splashed there in the last 24 hours, then you have a serious problem. If it hasn't been used, the one general thing which is true, other than Pesach. Pesach has its own halachas. But in terms of Bosa v'cholov, if I took a steak and I cooked it in a clean milchika pot, which hasn't been used for the last 24 hours, the steak is kosher and the pot is non-kosher. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
If you take hot water in the cup for tea, right? And if somebody likes to use the spoon, cold food, the good honey made or whatever.
The question is the following. Let me make this point. If you have water which is in a cup, in other words, it was previously in a coffee maker of some type or a kettle and you pour it into a cup. Subsequent to putting it into the cup, you put a spoon inside that cup, nothing's going to happen with that spoon. I'm talking with a metal spoon. With a metal spoon, nothing will happen. Okay, without going into all the particulars. So a lot of times, if you didn't have the spoon in there at the beginning, when you actually pour the hot water, even if you use the wrong spoon later, in most cases, or almost all cases, it's going to be mutter. Okay.
If you wash this
together with the plate. Ask Shaila. We'll go through it when it happens. Yes, then you should consider the cutting board flasics after that. You should wait 24 hours after it's splashed all over and then steam it up.
Okay, and if I have a pilot, can
I
consider reheating?
Reheating is not a problem of Bishul Akum. Okay, you'll have the other problems that I mentioned to you of, you know, the general kashrus of yes, but reheating something which has already been cooked, there's no issur of bishul akum on. Usually the fish in them, as far as I know, is raw, on the raw side. It's not edible. There would be bishul akum in making them, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You should not do that.
Better
not to do it. I'm not saying also better not to do it. Okay. Can you use a George Foreman for fish and meat? It depends upon one thing. If you can get it absolutely clean, then you could use it for fish and meat. If you cannot get it absolutely clean, you can't. Generally, I tell people not to use your outdoor grills for fish and for meat because I cannot conceive of how you're actually going to get them fully clean. I haven't figured it out yet. You want to? Yeah. Yeah. You can bake it in the oven. Don't worry about it. Not at the same time as the fish, though. Not at the same time. Oh, if it's covered, then it will be fine. If uncovered, you should not do it, yeah. No, it does not render the... It does not render... It's a prima golden, but it does not render the... kettle milachiks if you're pouring it over hot cocoa, but you do have to be very careful to keep pour from high up if you're doing that, or to pour it into one cup just water and then pour it on top of the powder in the next cup, because if you will look at your pump pot, you go home tonight if you have one of those pump pots and look underneath where you never look, you're going to find that there's all types of marks of things that are splashed up on it from somewheres. Can you eat something parv?
And a dairy fish. Like you were saying about the oil.
Yes. Or can you eat something which...
Pure places.
Yeah.
Can you go into a dairy place but get something parv?
If, as I said, if it was not used willfully as a flavor ingredient, then you're allowed to. Then it's not a problem. Yeah, I did want to mention that, and this is very, very important. Ovens have to be vented. If they wouldn't be vented, so after about the first time you use it, the oven wouldn't exist, and neither would the house exist anymore, you know. So fortunately, the guys, I don't know if they figured it out the first time or the second time, but sometime in history they did figure out you're supposed to vent the oven. A very fortunate discovery. Now, what you need to observe is where the steam is being vented. That a steam can be vented sometimes in the back, and sometimes in more modern ovens, it's vented under one of the back burners. Now, therefore, what you have to be careful about, for example, if you're cooking roast beef, you don't want a pair of pots or a millithick of pots on that burner where the hot steam is coming right out of the oven. That you have to be careful about. So that, in general, is something that you have to note. Yeah. Yeah, you. Yeah.
And putting them on a
plastic
counter, the granite.
Yeah, you should not be doing that. You should not.
What happens to the
If it was clean, nothing. If it was clean,
if what was clean?
If the granite was clean and the pan was clean, nothing happened.
I was clean at the bottom.
Yes.
If it wasn't.
If it wasn't, that it was a spill there in the last 24 hours, then you have a problem. But the granite, if you have real granite, I'm not talking Korean or other types of things, but real granite, you could kasha just by dumping hot water on it.
But it's really, and that's only if it's hot.
Yes.
Clearly, like, you can put an iced coffee on a sleeping
couch. Yes, not the best thing in the world to do, but it's mutter.
And also, I recently heard that a way to test to see if your microwave needs to even, is like, gets hot enough. If you take a baked potato, I heard, and cut it in half and bake it for 30 minutes, and if you can put your hand on the walls of your microwave and it doesn't burn.
Well, I wouldn't use a baked potato. I would rather use something that has a lot of water in it, liquid in it, and see what happens.
So is that possible? Like,
I don't believe that when you boil up a liquid and it steams, that the walls are not going to get hot. You know, it's a small, you know, the I felt myself. I put my hand in the microwaves and the walls get hot.
So the containers that they sell, microwave covers, are those good? They have holes in them to vent that steam, but is that okay?
So you should cover them. No, I want to tell you, this is very interesting. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. The truth of the matter is, there's no more reason that a microwave container should be vented than a pot in your stove should be vented. When you open up both of them, they have a lot of steam. And you have to be careful when you open them. But I think that the guys that made microwaves, you know, pots were invented somewhere back in the dawn of history. And microwaves were invented, whatever, 20 years ago or so, 25 years ago. And 25 years ago, they were afraid, listen, if we're in a society where McDonald's could get sued because the coffee was too hot, so the guys selling microwaves are afraid that somebody's going to burn themselves in the steam and come after them. So that's the reason they have all these chumras about, you know, making sure the steam escapes, etc. But it's no more necessary for the steam to escape than it is for the steam to escape from your pot on the stove. When you open the pot on your stove, if you're not careful, you're also going to get a nasty burn from the steam.
So those covers aren't enough?
If they're vented, they're not enough. No.
So you have to double wrap?
You should, yeah. Or use one without holes. Okay. A non-kosher microwave, if you double wrap but you put inside, you don't have a problem. Yes. Yeah, I didn't say it's appealing, but kosher it is. Yeah, you can still use it for kiddush. No, nothing's going to happen. Nothing is going to happen. And listen. Well, yeah, I don't think you want to drink coffee in the Kiddush cup. I don't think so.
But
they don't usually vent an oven through the other oven. That's not usually what takes place. Hang on. In a fleshing dishwasher, it's not going to become fleshing. Ramosha even paskin that if you keep down milk of the silverware, which was run through in the flames of the dishwasher, it's still kosher. That you don't have to kosher. That's what Ramosha paskin. And usually in a pan, as I say, you need to go through the particulars when you have the shayla, but usually a pan is not going to become treif like that. I'll take a couple more questions and we'll hold it at that point. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because I don't think that they're actually, to be actually treif in a sippy cup, I don't think it's likely to happen for one very simple reason. And that is that a child that uses a sippy cup, you don't give anything too hot to in the first place. You know, so they roll around, that's true, you know, they take their deflating hands and they put milliflakes and milliflakes to the flasics, that you have to be careful when you wash it off. But for them to make the dishes actually treif is pretty hot. What are you about? High chairs. Listen, high chairs, you should, while you're in between the melachos and the fleshes, you should wash them off well. you know, you don't usually give things that are that hot to a child in a high tree. If you do, so then take it and dump hot water on it. Go ahead. Yes.
So, can you wash it really hot water?
Well, since the chatchila, you should use a rack. Yes. Let me quote Rav Moshe Zilberman Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was a very significant figure in this yeshiva for many, many years. He used to come in every single afternoon. He spent a lot of he was there daily in the yeshiva many, many years back. And his rendering is the following. In fact, I even made a note of it tonight to share with you. In his statement about sinks, he says, the sink is treif, but it doesn't make things treif. So by and large, you know, if you have food particles, you know, you have still have cheese, and the fleishig thing got mixed in with it, you know, touched, then you have a real shadar that you have to ask. But some just for a spoon to fall onto the sink is not going to make it treif.
And do you have to wash it between?
You should. Any time that you use something for both milk and cheese, you should wash it well in between. Well, the basic story with countertops is that you put hot things on them a lot of times and you spill things on them. So the wisest course of action is to have two segregated areas. Otherwise, you have to be very, very yekish. That's not so easy to be in life. No. You put it on before Shabbos, right? Where did you put the food? You
didn't. Well,
you can't. The Israeli blech lechol adayis has the same din as a stovetop ledaiti, because it is hot enough to cook. You can boil the cholent on there. Yes, so it has the same din as a stovetop.
Could you put it upside down?
You can put an upside down aluminum pan and then put a dry kugel on top of it. Yes, yeah. Chavi, last question. I start again. I didn't hear the beginning of the question. I don't
know.
Usually, at a grilled cheese, I don't think. I'll think about it more. I don't think that it would be that would be bishalakum. I mean, the bread was baked already, the cheese was already, it's been pasteurized already, the tomato was edible raw, or the sauce. I don't think there'll be a problem. I will think about it. I'm not giving up sock on this.
Fish sticks.
Yes, that would suffice. Excuse me? Then the toaster oven needs to be kosher. You could probably rely upon putting it on for an hour and a half, and in the highest heat to render it kosher, because when it comes to koshering from Bishalakum, the halacha is very, very liberal, much more so than it is in other areas of koshering. I thank you all. I hope that you've enjoyed the evening. I got to run tomorrow in about 2 minutes.
That's what I want to ask. 10:30,
Can everyone just sit down for one more minute? I just have a few announcements. I'm sorry, I know it's late. First of all, thank you so much, Rabbi Welcher, for coming here tonight.
And digital copy of this,
as you know, he's a very busy man.
I have a son. I haven't really gotten to turn off yet.
We have someone here.